The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Vox Markets, and I am delighted to be joined today by Scott Evans from London Business School, who is part of the team behind the annual Numis Smaller Company and Other Indices. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing very well, and thanks very much for the intro.
No, not at all. This is a really fascinating piece of research. Happens every year, and it's particularly relevant, pertinent this year, given the awful year that we have had on the markets, and particularly at smaller companies' end. So you're going to talk us through the findings of your research this year, and perhaps end on a positive note, because whilst we've had a horrible year, there are some glimmers of hope in the data. So Scott, over to you. Perhaps start by introducing the indices.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for that. What I thought I would do is give you a little bit of background to the Numis indices, a quick overview of the annual review, which we've just published, and then pick out some of the more interesting highlights. And as you already pointed out, it wasn't a great year, especially for small mid-cap investors, but there were definitely some positives. And I'm hoping I can end on a positive message as well. So it's not all going to be doom and gloom, because we do look backwards, myself and my team, but there's some positives looking backwards to take forwards, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Right. In terms of the Numis indices, just to give you a bit of background, these were launched in 1987, consisted actually just of the Smaller Companies Index, which we refer to today as the NSCI. At the time, the index sponsor was Hawke Vett, which was later owned by ABN AMRO, then RBS, and now Jefferies. And it was known as the Hawke Vett Smaller Companies Index. Numis became the sponsor, and a very good sponsor, I have to highlight, in 2013. And under their auspices, we have actually launched a whole range of indices covering the whole of the UK equity market. But I'm going to focus more on the small cap index today, because I think that is really where the history lies and where we have a lot of interesting things to say. And I think in terms of listeners, that would be where we would get the most interest. So when the small cap index was launched back in 1987, just as a reminder for those of you who were around then, FTSE hadn't launched the small cap index. There was no available benchmark for small cap investors. And you think, well, who cares about that? What's the relevance for your listeners to that? Well, there's an interest. Obviously, when you're investing in small caps, you want to know if you're under or outperforming the benchmark, especially if you're invested in funds. It's very, very important to know whether the fund manager is beating or not beating the relevant benchmark. But actually, there was a more relevant issue. And I think it is as relevant today as it was then. It was really what the interest was how had small caps, particularly in the UK, done over the longer term compared to investing in large caps? There'd been a lot of work already in the US and it looked at the size premium and shown that using very long run data that small caps had been, on average, a much better investment than larger caps, and actually much better than many other asset classes as well. So when the small cap index was launched, it was unique because it came, we calculated, my colleagues, who I wasn't there at the time actually, calculated the history back to 1955. And so when it was launched, we were able to show, and this is a bit of a spoiler alert for the very how I'm going to end, but it showed that small caps had actually significantly outperformed over the longer term. They were one of the best asset classes, and there was a very positive small cap premium. Funny enough, in the 10 years after the index was launched, small caps massively underperformed. So just as we found this huge positive premium from small cap investing, it turned the other way. But as I will end, things have moved on since then. Just very, very quickly, as you already highlighted, every year, myself and my colleague, Professor Paul Marsh of London Business School, published the annual review. And it's a compendium of just everything you wanted to know and ask about the UK equity market, but were too afraid to ask. I mean, there's so much detail. It's really a nerd's paradise. So I'm not really going to spend my time going through all the different charts and turn this into an episode of The Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin, as we've discussed. but what I'm going to try and do is just give you a very, very quick overview of last year and then pick out some of the, I think, more interesting highlights. So firstly, as we know, last year was not a good year for small caps. We look at it throughout the book. We look at all the sectors. We look at the industries. We look at the style. Style investment is a big part of our work. But last year, just in summary, it was the year of the mega caps, massively outperformed the small caps. It was also a year in which it was very much about industry and sector. It was about energy, basic materials, and healthcare. And within those, it was big oil, big mining, big pharma, and just about everything else did badly. And I think if last year you didn't have a great year in investing in equities, you can take some solace by the fact that the Numis All Share, and by the way, the Numis All Share is a proper all share index because it covers every single company listed on the UK, on the London Stock Market, and it includes AIM as well. So it's about 1,700 companies compared to the FTSE All Share, which is 600. Anyway, of those 1,700 plus companies, 76% generated a negative return last year. So it was only the largest and only a small amount of the market actually generated a positive return. So don't feel so bad if you pick some of the losers like I did.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. Oh, I had some mega caps as well.
Yes, well, it was a year of mega caps, and I'll come on to that in a bit more. You know, given that AstraZeneca is now worth $176 billion, which is almost twice the total market cap of AIM, you can just see how big the big have become. Mm. So in general, it was the smaller, small companies that did the worst, because we also do, we have the NSC 1000, which is the micro caps, and the NSCI, which is the small caps, and we have the mid cap index. But it was the smaller, the worst the performance, apart from AIM. I mean, AIM as a whole did pretty badly, but it was by far the larger companies at AIM that did the worst. They really dragged it down. One of the things which happened with all the performance last year, and it's very relevant to what I'm going to come on to, and I've just mentioned it already, is about the massive consolidation. You know, the larger stocks got larger with the likes of Astra and BP and Shell. Now, the top 10 stocks of the market, and that's out of the 1,750 or so companies, the top 10 account for 40% of the total capitalization of the market. So it is very much a highly consolidated market given what's happened. So large caps did generate a positive return last year. The market as a whole generated a slightly negative. Small caps were huge underperformers, but that is really does distort the thing, distort what really happened. The market as a whole did very badly. Most stocks underperformed. Negative returns from most of them. Okay, that just gives you a bit of background there. I'm just going to pick out 5 points from the annual review, which I'm hoping will add a bit of value to your life. First, I'm just going to look at the births and the deaths register, and that's the IPOs and those that are departed. Then I'm going to have a look at something which we don't normally spend much time on, and that's companies that have lost their whole value during the year. I mean, we don't like to spend too much time on it, because mainly because they don't really, that their value isn't that much. But last year was a little bit different. Then I want to do something a bit more positive, dividends and factor returns. And then our favorite subject, the fallen angels. So, okay, quickly looking at the births and deaths registered last year. It's something obviously we're very interested in, looking at the number of companies coming in by our IPO and the number of companies going out, whether it's through, there's various routes that they can leave the market. The IPO market, we've tracked it back since 1955, and there were three characteristics, I think, last year on the IPO market, which were quite interesting. Firstly, average size of company joining last year. On it, the average was 700 million, which actually seems quite big. I know that's, you know, in terms of large caps and AstraZeneca, what have you, that's quite small. But in terms of the history, that would be quite big. But that number is very much distorted by the $30 billion demerger of Haleon from GSK. The median, which is much more relevant for us, was just $14 million. So the median company, in terms of the types of company that joined last year, were very, very small. The listing venue was also quite different. Usually, and you can look at our long-term statistics, AIM is always the most popular venue for companies coming in, because most IPOs are quite small. They choose AIM. Last year, very different. The vast majority went for a main market listing, but on the standard segment. And there's a reason for highlighting that. Is I'm not making a judgment about whether standard is good or AIM is bad or whatever, nothing like that whatsoever. It's just that any companies that join via a standard listing aren't eligible for access to or entry to any of the FTSE indices. So they'll never turn up in the FTSE small cap, FTSE 250, FTSE large cap, or FTSE 100, or any of the FTSE sector indices, which is a shame, because they're there, but they're never accounted for. Mm. We do include them in the Numis indices, but it depends on their nationality tests. And what we mean by that is not us being xenophobic. It's exactly the same with FTSE. For to enter into the UK indices, they need to pass that they are a UK company. It doesn't mean trading in the UK, but it needs to be their main venue. But we do include them. But it was very different last year. Nearly the vast majority of the total of 47 IPOs that they were. That's one statistic. That's the only statistic I'm going to use. 47 IPOs last year. I think the vast majority of those were, I think 31 were standard listed. The other thing which was quite peculiar about last year, and it is very relevant, I think, for investors, is that most of the companies were what we call cash shells or special purpose acquisition companies or SPACs. These are not trading companies. We don't know what they do. They might acquire something. They may not. So it was quite a weird year for IPOs. Those the birth register was an odd one. We had very small. We had mainly standard listed SPACs come into the market, and we didn't have the usual influx of interesting companies. Some we did have some, but not that many. Mm. Now, I'm going to quickly run through those companies have lost their value, entire value. I don't like to dwell on this because it's a bit schadenfreude, but usually there'll be a number of companies that go bust during the year and they lose all their value. We don't really care about them because if you're in shareholders, it's a real shame, obviously, but most of them started the year were tiny, and the overall impact on the market is minuscule. 12 companies became valueless last year. That's really historically quite low. I mean, the average over time, I think going back to 1955 or maybe 87 actually, would be around about 24, so half the average. But the total cumulative value of all those companies was actually 11 billion. And that's a big number to have completely wiped out during the year. A lot of that actually was as a result of Evraz and some of the other Russian listed stocks that had to be delisted with a zero value because of sanctions. But there were other companies like Made.com, Jules, 4D Pharma, all of which I think were above 100 million, Made about 500 million. So there were some substantial companies that lost all their value. And that has an impact in terms of this what the company's going in and actually the structure of the indices going forward. Right, so that's some negative. So I've been very negative so far. I've said small caps underperformed, huge consolidation of the market, the mega caps are the winners, everything else was the losers, and a number of companies lost all of their value and 11 billion was wiped out. Dividends. Now, if you're like me and you take more of a sort of a value and an income approach, especially an income approach, I like my dividends these days, then last year was actually a slightly more positive market, especially for small caps. We've been tracking dividend payments, and we track dividend payments very, very closely because they're a major component in the total return indices that we generate. But we also been tracking dividends since the pre and the post COVID period. As you know, 2020 was the biggest 1 year cut to dividend payments in the UK. I think it's by a country mile, it was the biggest, about 33% cut in 2020. And that's looking back to 1955 when our records began. This was followed by actually the biggest rebound. But when we were looking at this last year, there was still a long way to go in terms of getting dividend income back up to the pre-COVID levels. Now, last year, what we saw was small caps actually surpassed their 2019 level. So they have got their, and that's not just the number of companies paying dividends, that is the total value of dividends paid. So small caps are back up there. They've got their dividends back being paid again above the pre-pandemic levels. Mid caps almost there, they're about 2 or 3% below. Large caps are still about 20% behind in terms of dividend payments relative to where they were in the pre-COVID level. They're getting there, but it's still taking a bit longer. So a positive outlook, or also a positive looking back on dividends, especially within small caps. The other thing which we make a big, big issue of in the annual book, and something which we provide a lot of data on for the clients of the numerous indices is what we call factor returns. And this is really about investment strategies. And it's something we've been tracking for a long time. And just to give you a background what I mean, we look at five different factors. And these are called momentum, value, low volatility, income, and size. And the reason for looking at this, people, I think implicitly, I think we all do, we all take a sort of a strategy in terms of what we invest in. You know, as I've already said, I am more value orientated. And implicitly in our strategies or our factors, if you're taking a value strategy, you're going negative on growth. So one is always the opposite of the other. Momentum, which has been a very interesting strategy over time, is really about you buy the winners, those companies going up, you buy them and you sell those companies which are going down. So it's called a winners minus losers strategy. Other things like low volatility means that you're buying the low risk stocks, those that don't vary that much compared to you go short the high volatility. So you're taking a low risk strategy if you're buying low vol. And income obviously is obvious, it's dividend payments. And size, we look at size within size indices. So for example, within the NSCI, the small cap index, we'll look at how did the smallest companies do relative to the rest of them. Last year was very interesting. Whereas the market as a whole, especially for small caps, did quite badly, the factor premiums or the excess returns you could have earned by investing in these different strategies was very, very positive indeed. We saw particularly strong performance from momentum, value, and low volatility. In fact, of all the factor returns, of all the strategies that you could have taken last year, the only one which generated a negative return, funny enough, was size. And that was pretty obvious because is because the small caps did particularly badly. So it was a standout year for people taking a factor approach or a investment strategy approach within, whether it was in the small caps, large caps, or mid caps. AIM was peculiar in that maybe it's just me, but when I think of AIM, I think of as a higher growth market, potentially higher risk, and I don't mean that in a negative way, just the risk and return. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would look at AIM. But last year, if you looked at the factor premiums within AIM, it wasn't high growth and high risk stocks that did well. By far, the standout performers were the low vol and the value stocks. They were the best performers within AIM last year. And just to note that value is always the opposite of growth. So if you take a value strategy, that means you are implicitly going short growth. So now, something I must point out, and I think you have to put your banner underneath me now, is to say that factored investing does not always generate positive returns. You know, we've looked at these things over the long term. We've gone back to the start of the indices 68 years ago. And this is really what academics and fund managers look at, is in terms of, do factor premiums, do they exist over the longer term? Because that's the important thing. From year to year, they can be massively different. 2020 was a very good example when all the factor premiums generated negative returns. So whatever strategy you took that we have, you'd have lost your money. But last year was very different. So factor premiums changed quite significantly from year to year. But over the longer term, and as we show in the annual review, you know, momentum has been a really, really winning strategy, especially within small caps. And that means buying your winners, selling your losers. Over the long term, it has outperformed just about everything. And behind that has been value, although value investing over the last 10 years has been dreadful, and sort of small cap value investors have had a really tricky time, but that really has come back. And last year was a strong year for value investing. Now, you know, the question becomes, is the market now about value, not growth? Well, we know technology had a particularly difficult period last year, but it has certainly come back as value. And longer term, people find this very surprising. If you look at the very long term for small cap investing, you've made a lot more money out of value than you have from growth, when you actually think it's going to be the other way around, in that it's all about growth investments. And I'm afraid it hasn't been. Now, the bit which I find very exciting, which that's because I'm a data nerd, is what we call the fallen angels.
I think our listeners will find this bit exciting as well.
Well, I hope so. I hope so, because it's the nearest thing I'm going to make about a prediction. We don't make predictions, and we look at the past. We don't look at the future, because we know full well as soon as we predict something, it'll go completely the opposite way. So I tend to be a bit of a contraindicator. So I'll flag that now. But fallen angels, what are they? So we talked about every year we have to rebalance the indices, because we have to reshape them in terms of the companies would have left, companies will join because of there might be an IPO in the year, or they become small enough to join if it's a size index. So, for example, every year companies fall down from the Numis large cap into the Numis mid cap. They fall from the Numis mid cap into the small cap. And that happens every year. And some companies go up, obviously, because they got too big to stay within the size index. So the companies which are falling down, in particular those which are falling into the small cap index, we refer to them as the fallen angels. You know, they've not come down out of choice. They've come down because their market capitalizations at the year end have fallen to a level which means they can no longer stay in the mid cap or large cap index. Last year was very unusual because of the consolidation which happened in the market, and because remember the Numis indices are quite different to, say, the FTSE indices. They're all based on percentages of the market. So the small cap index is the bottom 10% of the market. It's nothing to do with the number of companies. It's just the bottom 10%, whereas the mid cap is the middle 20, excluding the bottom 5%. I've just lied, haven't I? I've given you more percentages and some numbers.
Original pairing.
Yeah, back to original pairing and ice cream sales in Baden-Baden. What's happened? Because of the consolidation of the market, we've had the highest proportion of companies or foreign angels falling into the Numis small cap index. In fact, 26% of the start year value of the NSCI is made up of companies which have fallen out of the other index into it. Now you think, yeah, okay, whatever, who cares? There are some real interesting implications of that. Firstly, the more sort of nerdy reason is that the fallen angels are last year's previous losers. And so they tend to be the companies that have underperformed. They're on lower PE multiples, tend to have higher dividend yields, and they change the structure and the dynamics of the index. And you know, this partly explains why the start year PE of the small cap index is only eight times. The trailing multiple is 8 times. That compared to 17 times trailing multiple when we started this time last year. Similarly, the dividend yield is over 3.5%. That is at least 100 basis points higher than it was a year ago. That's not all due to the rebalancing of the fallen angels, but they do contribute. It is actually also because the rating of small caps has gone down a long way over the year. The other reason which is of interest, and particularly to me, is that you've got to ask your question. What do you do with these fallen angels? Do you buy them? Is this time they've had a bad year? They've fallen out of the mid cap or whatever it is index, and they've come into the small cap index. Should we buy these? Give them a second chance. Well, we've given that we're obsessed with data and returns, we've looked at this over the very long term and said, right, on average, if you had bought these fallen angels, what was the impact on the overall index, the overall portfolio return? We found that on average, it was negative. So on average, buying them actually had a negative impact on total returns. However, there's two standout years. That was 75 after the bear market in 73, 74, and 2009, obviously after the global financial crisis. Small caps in both those years, in the previous years, sorry, had significantly underperformed. It had terrible relative and absolute performance. They were followed by the two best years for the fallen angels, when they made a significant contribution to overall portfolio return. And so not buying them in those years would have been the wrong thing to do. So the question now becomes, we seem to have the same characteristics as those past 2 years. Are we catching the falling knives? or are we buying the phoenix rising from the ashes? And I think that's the question. Is this are we on the cusp of the third time? Right, so that's the amount I'm going to give you in terms of prediction. I'm just going to end now on some of the longer term trends, and something which we are very obsessed with in our annual review is that, and also I can hopefully sum up on a positive note, especially for those people who are interested in investing in small caps. I mean, despite the short term hiatus and setback last year, you'll still find that the long term track record for investing in small caps stays very much intact. Since 55, when our index started, the annualized premium, so the amount that you've got from investing in small caps over large caps, is 3%. Okay, interestingly, that's the same number when we look at loads of the main markets around the world, the US, if we looked at Canada and the world market in terms of small caps. The small cap premium is between 3 and 4%. So it's interesting that the UK is very much there as well. It's been higher, it's been as high as 6, but 3%, or between 3 and 5, 3.5% has been where it's been at for quite a long time. So that's the excess return from investing in small caps over large caps. I think the other thing, which is very important, if you look at small cap investing over the very long term, and we look at things in a real adjusted for inflation, you find that the very small caps, the micro caps, have actually generated an annualized return of almost 11% since 1955. That compares to just 6% for large caps and 2% for government bonds. So good, very good long-term performance, both in nominal and in real terms. They've been the best performing of the asset classes that we look at, better than house prices, for example, much better than house prices. We find that it's only about as under 3% the annualized return from investing in houses since 1955. That's slightly cheeky because we're only talking about the house price. We're not talking about the income from a house. But, and the last thing I'm going to leave you on is that if you invested in microcaps and you put £1 into your microcap fund in 1955, and you were a very good person and you reinvested all your dividends, you didn't go and squander them like I do, you reinvested them back, you'd be sitting on £21,168 today. If you'd invested that same pound in large caps and you'd reinvested the dividends and not squandered them, you'd have £1,255 today. So there we go. Hopefully it gives you a positive message that small cap investment longer term has been a big outperformer. Last year was not great, but then we have badges.
Absolutely. No, thank you for that insight. It's an absolutely fascinating study, and it's great to end on a positive message for small caps, because as we say, it's been a pretty horrendous year. I would have one question. So given that, you know, last year saw rising interest rates to combat inflation, obviously they impact highly rated growth shares, you know, more acutely. If that environment persists, you know, Do those growth shares bounce back? I mean, you know, is it a headwind that will continue this year, or is value, in your opinion, where we should still be looking? Or has growth, in fact, even turned into value? You know, the derating of a lot of growth shares actually makes them look more like value shares today.
That's, I think your last point is very relevant. You know, where does growth start and where does value end? And that's what's happened. You know, obviously, in general, interest rates going up is never good for long duration stocks. So for growth stocks, higher interest rates is never a good thing. We've had a global increase in interest rates. The period of zero interest rates has come to an end. So that's never a good environment for growth. However, it really is about what about a few years ago, we actually looked at all of the characteristics that drive performance for small cap over time in terms of the impact of recession, the impact of interest rates. And in general, an interest rate increasing environment is not good for small cap and it's not good for growth. So I think if we are going to continue to see interest rates going up, but potentially at a decreasing rate, that's never going to be a good environment. And then value is likely, on looking back over time, to continue to outperform. But what we don't know is that we could be at the point of where we've seen that inflation is starting to come down a bit. We've seen it's already falling back in the US. The US is still, the Fed is still quite hawkish in terms of interest rates. So I don't think we're quite out of the woods yet for for growth stocks. But as you said, a lot of them already been derated. So they're not particularly very, you know, highly valued growth stocks anymore. So I'd be a little bit more positive on that. So I think in general, the interest rate environment, if it continues to see the significant hikes in interest rates, not a good background for growth, and it'd be a better background for value. Valuation has changed quite a lot already. We've seen some of the very, very highly rated companies coming down. But it really has to be about, you know, income as well. You can have some, you know, Microsoft, if you remember in the past, I can remember when you could buy Microsoft and 12 times earnings and get a nice dividend as well.
Apple as well was the same.
Yeah. So these things do turn into from growth into value. But hopefully in a long-winded way, I'm saying that I think as interest rates continue to rise, it's a tricky environment. If we get into that peak of interest rate rising, then we could be in a much more positive environment for some of the, especially some of the blown up, derated growth stocks.
Mm. And I guess in that sense, you get the best of both worlds going forward. You're getting the benefit of growth and you can buy them at sort of value ratings.
Well, one thing which is very clear from our study is that start year ratings for small caps in particular is very low. There are the high, so almost not the very lowest, but in terms of PE relatives, looking back to 55 when we started this, it's the third lowest in history in terms of the start year rating for small caps in general. And one of the, not the highest, in dividend yields, because dividend yields just used to be much, much higher for small caps back in the sort of the 60s and 70s. They used to trade on much higher yields than they do now. But it is getting back to a level where you think, well, that's a lot of income you're getting and it's trading on a very little rating.
No, it certainly sounds like a potentially happy hunting ground for those interested in small caps and the fund managers, small cap fund managers who I know pay very close attention to this study. Thank you again, Scott. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.